Welcome to Tilt Talk Radio. Today we're talking the harvest time checklist. Time to start going through how things went this year and make some decisions perhaps for next year. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at how we're making sterile flies to fight the new world screwworm. Egg History Minute, we're going to talk about Fritz Haber. Cool beans, that's corny. We'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, both all with Tilth Agronomy. I flubbed it. I almost said both, because last week it was just the two of us.
Yep.
But now the Holy Trinity is back.
We're back.
It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, feels good to be back. Team's back again.
Team of Trace to the top. Sorry, that was SpongeBob the Musical. We used to listen to that a lot.
I don't think I've ever heard that or seen that.
Yeah, it's SpongeBob, Patrick, and what's the squirrel? Sally Squirrel?
Sure.
It is not Sally, but I don't know what it is.
So. It's something like that, though.
Who's faster here? Who can find it faster?
Sandy Cheeks. And we used to listen to that one a lot when the kids were younger in the car on drives.
No Squidward?
No, well.
He's out.
Squidward, really? Team player, does that sound like Squidward to you?
No. No, it does not.
Yes, Squidward is the cranky old man telling the kids to get off his lawn.
Via clarinet.
Yes, and plays the clarinet. Which is pretty impressive for an octopus, but or squid. I guess he technically would be a squid since his name is Squidward.
We're on it today.
Yep. Definitely got this. We got this.
This time of year, like with being August, the corn's pretty much done pollinating. Isn't this like the best time football starting? It always feels good this time of year, August.
It's getting there. Not all the corn is fully done pollinating.
Correct.
We're approaching a good time of year.
Can take a breath.
Yeah.
But speaking of football, did you see the Packers picked up two new tight ends? So I think we're up to like 8 now.
Well, that's good because they got one kicker. They keep cutting everybody. So 8 kickers or 8 tight ends.
Yep. I was reading an article yesterday about because they picked up two nobodies, really. I mean, they're
somebody, Matt.
College tight ends. It was really confusing because the article I read said the one guy was a first year, but he's been in the league for 2 years. So I'm not really sure how that works, how you can be first year when you've, I guess because he's never actually played a game. He was on a bunch of practice squads. But yeah, but neither one of them has really played in the NFL. And I didn't really read into who the other 6 are at this point, but
I mean, I would assume Tucker Kraft is still our
our
guy.
Yeah.
And he's cool. He's kind of, is he technically a farm boy? He's just from a very rural area.
So. From the Dakotas, right?
Yeah, from Dakotas. It's just cool. He's kind of the new Jordy Nelson that way of
yep.
Our,
is that an obligation of the Packers have to have at least one guy from a rural community somewhere? Even if it's not from Wisconsin.
Yes.
Since Jordy was Kansas. Tucker's from the Dakotas. I mean, we've had some Wisconsin guys on the team, but did you see that the interim replacement for Tony Romo is J.J. Watt?
Yeah.
Ooh, is it really?
Yep. So now it's getting serious. Tony got slapped with an additional charge on top of just his DUI. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, something. it was like refusal to. I actually saw that they released the body cam video, and he basically just tried to call his lawyer while he was talking to the cop.
Perfect.
And the cop said, "Nope, you can't." He's like, "I can't." Like, "Nope." And then they arrested him. So something like with refusing to take the sobriety test or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
He's probably done, right?
It's a good chance. I mean, I guess we'll see where they decide to go with it. But
that stuff always shocks me how, yes, it like, seems to bounce off some people and other people. They can't shake certain things.
Yeah, he was on his way to visit his grandparents.
That's what I'd heard that, and I believe they found people looked into that and didn't really find much evidence of grandparents that are alive.
Oh, no. Oh.
Yes. So he was leaving a Wisconsin golf course, which this time of year coming from a Wisconsin golf course, yeah.
But I guess he had an open container, too.
Ooh, yeah.
He was having a good day.
Which I don't know. That law is so weird. Like, I don't know if it was not fully empty in the vehicle or if he actually, like, had one in the cup holder or what.
Right.
Like,
that's a good point, Matt, of, like, open container can mean a lot of things that...
Cause technically, like, even if you're not drinking from, like, a bottle of liquor, but it was opened, that's considered an open container. Right. So
he had the true definition of a roadie.
Possibly. I don't... Don't know what the open container was. I didn't see anything like that.
The way what I heard about it made it sound like it was just like an open bottle in the back. That it was, you know, like
right.
It wasn't necessarily.
Not like he was had it in the cup holder and was going to town. It was like, oh, I'll take this one. I'll finish this later. Because you make such good decisions when you've been drinking all day at a golf course. So Jim Nantz and J.J. Watt could be the...
He did good last year when I watched, so that'll be good for him. He obviously knows ball.
Yeah, no, I mean, can't argue that. Half
the time, Romo would try to diagnose a play, and he would get it wrong anyway, so...
Well, yeah, that was his whole shtick for a while, was, you know, predicting what was going to happen in the play, and then it just kind of got old after a while.
It worked really well for him. And people loved it, and then all of a sudden when it didn't work, it really flopped. And then he was classic for just making odd noises while plays were going on. So that was, yes.
The Larry McCarron style.
You're right. But with Larry, it's maybe different over the radio, and it's different when
it's
your own guy cheering for your team, or the TV broadcasters are fairly neutral in general, I would say, so it's a little different that way.
Yeah, there are definitely worse former players who tried to do color commentary that they could have chosen, so. I know sometimes it gets painful. Like, who is this guy? Oh, he was a lineman at one time? Yeah, that explains why he really just is talking out of his butt right now. So, yeah, JJ's going to the A-team, at least temporarily. We'll see what happens. All right, you guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Sure.
We're just such high energy this morning. We're all all hitting on all cylinders. So
we're going to hit the coffee or the Diet Dew. Bill's cracked the Diet Dew.
Cracking the American Dew, Diet American Dew, or is it an actual Diet Mountain Dew?
No, it's
the American.
Yep, Diet American Dew.
My fill-in Bill would be happy this morning that I have one going already.
It's good. All right. So, like Todd mentioned earlier, we're kind of getting to that time of year where things are starting to slow down right before harvest. I mean, obviously wheat harvest has happened, or small grains if you got those. So technically we're in harvest season. We've harvested some things.
Good point, man. I did not see the hashtag 2026 harvest with wheat as much as you do with like beans and corn. But
yep, yeah.
Sounds like yields have been okay or good.
Yeah, I've heard some pretty good wheat yields so far. I even saw a cornfield got opened up, so somebody either ran out of silage or something yesterday.
I saw a local here to Tilth World headquarters doing some green chopping of some corn.
Oof.
That's lovely.
That's, yeah.
But, yeah, so as we get closer to, you know, putting the pedal down on harvest, it's probably time to start thinking about how this year went and maybe if there's some things you want to consider changing or things you weren't happy with this year that you can start to plan for next year. Because once you get into harvest, you're going to be so busy. You're going to be going through fields that you might not have time until afterwards, and then the snow flies, and you kind of forget about some of these things. So it's a good time to maybe take a second, assess your fields, talk with your agronomist, or you know whether you're walking your fields yourself or you have somebody walking your fields. Just have a discussion like, okay, you know, what are we happy with? What do we maybe need to look at for next year? You know, what was out of our control, like that doesn't really necessarily need some sort of adjustment, but that we should expect for harvest. And so first thing I've got is weed control. Are you happy with it? Does it look good? Is it just okay? You know, there was some escapes that you weren't super happy with, maybe some spray skips or something that, you know, you need to address and make sure that everything's working better next time. Or are you actually dreading harvest because you've got so many weeds in places that you just know it's going to cause problems, slow you down? And, you know, what can you do about it? Obviously, we're not going to go in and spray right now to manage weeds. And, you know, we can get away with that a little bit with wheat. Guys will go in with Roundup and hit it right before harvest. But corn silage, corn grain, that's not really an option to really manage anything at this point. So
I think this one opens up two unique things. Of typically, corn does not get talked about in this realm because when you drive by, you can't really see, unless it's a total disaster,
right?
You have no idea really what the weed control was.
No, you got to walk in the field.
So you do have to go in the field, yes. Whereas beans sort of gets the bad rap here, I believe, of like, oh, why are the beans weedy and the beans suck?
And now our friends are right. You called me on Monday.
Oh, I called Bill Monday and was like, holy man, did they...
You're gone for a week and they...
Well, it's kind of, and I knew some where they were down there somewhat, but at the same time, it seemed like they really poked their heads out everywhere. And driving from, you know, through Illinois, through Indiana, and there were parts of... Illinois was pretty much clean, it seemed, in general. They didn't have much of a problem. But in Indiana, there was fields that were really bad, and there were fields that, and a lot very clean. So you had...
They didn't change in the 2 weeks since I was there?
They did not.
Okay.
That was what you had seen, I believe, too, Bill. Yeah.
Indiana was not... And again, you don't know without stop. I always want to, like, when you do these road trips, like, stop and talk to somebody. Like, hey, Mr. Farmer, like...
Yeah. We'll do the Tilth Talk Radio over the road.
What's going on?
Yeah.
What happened here?
Why is your field so...
Spring. It's like the post-game conference after the...
What did you do wrong?
Yeah.
It would go so well, because I'm sure the farmer would welcome you just stopping. Yeah. Like, hey, I'm an agronomist from Wisconsin. Just wondering, what the hell is going on? Like, what's this? What you doing here, buddy?
Because it could be Palmer, too.
It could, and the part that got me as I came back and looked at it, Bill, was some farms that we did this very similar, not necessarily the same, but similar programs, similar things, and had very different outcomes. That's actually what's gotten me with the soybean thing right now, very frustrated of the farms where it didn't work well. They didn't necessarily do something way different than everybody else. It was a timing,
did the weeds that were present a little taller than the other farm? Like,
right. Was it dry and you didn't get activation of your pre? And
previous, a lot of it in there. Very wet fields to begin with that have much higher water hemp issues from past year. You know, it's seed banging and just how many you're going after sort of a thing. So
the craziest part, Todd, is I have a lot of Plenish acres this year.
Yep.
And those fields in general are cleaner.
So you're saying your high oil beans where you have less traits to use
are cleaner than the fields that, and maybe, I don't know if lazier is the right term, but I think we're more diligent with the, like, we got to get that second pass on.
What I was going to go back to, I believe it was episode 343, we talked about how the pre's were working at that time.
Yeah. Yep.
This year and what they were doing. Even talking back to the NACC guys, and Alan Hubers said that the pre's worked really well this year, and in past years they did not. So you're right, Bill. Of like,
be about early June.
Yeah. So you are right of maybe this was a year where pre's just did work better than post.
Yep. And I do think in corn I'm noticing some of my guys are doing like a one pass early post. And depending on when that early, in quotes,
right,
is, I'm seeing big differences in water hemp control. 6-inch water hemp and a full shot of Acuron GT is not working. It's too late.
You're right.
Yeah.
We got it. Not that Acuron doesn't work. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying
six inch
water hemp isn't, like, we were just, we have too much to do. We're not getting out there on time.
Even at
a full shot of Acuron, it isn't working.
I'm calling it the new See and Spray, not John Deere's, where it sees the weed. Not that that wouldn't work. Okay, but
when you see the weed,
when you see the water hemp, you spray, not like, oh, it's an inch tall, we got some time. No, it's you start getting things ready. And like you say, the guys that we did get out there on time, it was fine, but maybe where there was a slight delay or something happened, you just couldn't get it.
Somebody else's farm is doing corn, and so your farm can't do beans, so they get done with the other corn.
Yeah, or...
Matt, for those listeners, Matt did...
I did look at Bill.
Look at Bill and stare him down.
So we had two farms that were using the same applicator, and my farm's Plenish beans got delayed in spraying because of his farm's amount of corn that needed to get sprayed.
Sorry.
You should be sorry, Bill. No. It's not your fault. It's just the way it works sometimes. If you're not spraying yourself, you're subject to whenever the spray guy can get there. So,
well, and the trouble with my farm is the guy that sprays also does all the chopping. So, like, they have an extended planting, and then they get into chopping first crop, and then spraying is the thing that gets put to the wayside, and they keep planting corn, and just it's some of that.
Yep. Yeah. There's always challenges, and so that's why sometimes you just have to live with it. And part of the reason I bring it up too is this matters for next year. Like Todd used the term seed bank. Like you're adding to your seed bank now if you've got these fields where you've got escapes, especially the water hemp. I mean, those are capable of producing thousands of seeds per plant. So you're looking at a pretty big seed bank going into next year. So you know you're probably going to have to do a little bit tighter management.
The other thing I would say is don't be afraid to grab some of those water hemp seed heads and send them down to UW. Rodrigo does testing. Because I'm wondering if some of it is we're gaining resistance on some other things.
And you're right, Bill, in the instances we're looking at this week, these are ones that don't make sense why they didn't die. And some of them, I think, didn't die the first time, and they should have died. So, yes, you're right. Of maybe it is time to just see what's going on in that, and start to use different tools then. And you're right. If you miss that opportunity to do that, it's not like you can go find the seed in the soil later or anything like that. So
right.
you are right.
If you're going to pre-buy if you used Acuron this year and you're planning on just rolling into it next year and there's some resistance there, that's probably not the best option.
I like this one to start, Matt, because it is a difficult conversation that sometimes we try to act like between the farmer and the agronomist, like, you know, you got to have that difficult conversation and figure out the why. and not point fingers necessarily. I mean, that is what finding out the why
is. It's usually what happens.
Right.
It's the Spider-Man meme.
Yeah.
The agronomist points at the spray guy and the farmer. The farmer points at the spray guy and the agronomist and... The spray guy is pointing at both of you. So.
It gets to this time of year where, and the farmer's right to be like, what, you know, and sometimes they're the spray guy, but if they're not in this case, then they're pointing at whoever, and it's like, well, we just got to learn from it and make sure you fix it for the next year.
And let's face it, whether you're an independent like us or another agronomist, our report card is... heavily weighted on weed control, yeah. Right? Like, that's one of our bigger, obviously yield, but weed control is like 80% of our grade.
Yep.
I've got one that's out of, I've been pulling more Roundup out of, I've got one where there's water hemp escapes on like a third of the farm of soybeans and two thirds are clean. And talking to Doug yesterday, and he told me, well, yeah, I had a similar thing and we didn't use Roundup on the early post pass. And then as I said that, I'm like, yeah, those would be the same fields in my instance where we use Liberty. It was a Flexstar dual application, okay. And there wasn't much for grass or anything. Yep. And there was some water hemp, but I was like, well, Roundup isn't going to matter.
Right. That's not going to take
it's not going to help. But in this case with the Flexstar, it must have helped. I don't know how to explain besides odd things like that where you kind of sometimes write off certain chemistries that they're not doing anything. And I would still say in this case, Roundup must have been doing something.
There was synergy.
Yes, right. So it is going into each instance of trying to figure out where things worked or didn't work.
All right, next thing that you can kind of look at now before the crop gets too mature is fertility. You know, does it look like the crop's lacking? Does it look good? You know, there's some really nice green corn out there. Is it halfway up yellow? I should have put more on. Obviously, with fertilizer prices, that might be part of the decision you expect. Maybe a little bit less because you weren't going to put as much out. Did your timings work out? You know, maybe you just got done with Y-drop not that long ago on some of that later planted corn. So, you know, what decisions can you glean from that? Did everything look good? Well, then you're probably good, and your program's going to work next year, barring, you know, some other obstacle coming into your way. But if things are lacking and it doesn't look as good as you want it to look, then maybe you need to start thinking about your fertility program for next year and how am I going to change it? Am I going to try to split more applications? Am I going to put something else in? Like, do I need to add more sulfur? Do I need to add, you know, whatever nutrient that might be lacking? So it's a good time to do that because when you go through and harvest, I mean, silage is a little bit different, but corn, grain, soybeans, all the plants pretty much look the same, and you can't really tell how good your fertility was if you wait till you're sitting in the combine going through the field. So now is a good time to kind of start making those assessments as well, thinking ahead to next year and thinking of your budget for, you know, if everything looks really good, maybe you can even afford to knock a little bit off next year and save some money. But
you could do some tissue sampling too.
Yeah.
This time of year to see what your plants are telling you.
I think this is one of the best time to take tissue samples. I know in season we like them because then we can make decisions based on that and try to, you know, obviously do an immediate fix. The problem with that, sometimes that can be very weather related,
yeah,
depending on that particular week's weather, whatever. But ear leaf corn tissue, it's still one of the most calibrated times to grab it and really do a check how we did end up. We had some beans that we grabbed last week that we kind of thought would be potash deficient because we're tweaking with the sort of low potassium fields and we're starting up the amount of potash used and try to fix the fields, and they still looked like they maybe had, and the tissues all came back just perfect on everything.
Good.
So it was a good sort of test to show, and that particular farmer was maybe going to do a foliar feed, so we spent, you know, a couple hundred bucks on tests, but he would have spent a couple thousand on
that foliar.
On that foliar that wouldn't have necessarily, if sure wouldn't have helped him. So there obviously, like I said, in season is nice to make decisions, but having these tests now is a really nice time. Or maybe it wouldn't be bad, say you already took some tissues early season and they showed some sort of deficiency, grabbing them again to see what you've done since then, has it changed or not.
And if you're planning any, you know, obviously prices of fertilizer and commodities aren't very favorable, but if you are planning any fall fertilizer, now's the time to be thinking about that so that you're prepared and ready to go when things are harvested. You can get out there and do your thing.
Yeah, you get that lined up and going.
We were talking yesterday, this goes into fertility, but pH and lime as well. This yep. is not a bad time to start thinking yep. about, if especially that's more reasonable priced. Maybe you can get it piled up on the edge of the field for right after soybean harvest or any wheat fields that you have right now that have a pH issue. This is a really good time to get that spread.
Especially because there's not a lot of folks out there that spread lime.
Right.
So get on a list on the folks that do so that you can get your tillage done or you're not waiting for them till Thanksgiving.
And if nothing else, make sure you're keeping up on your soil sampling so that you can keep planning your fertility into the future. Make sure you know what fields need it so that when it's harvested, you can get it sampled. Because once the field is off, then it's the race. Can we get it sampled before it gets worked, manured, whatever? So
we could use some rain. That would help.
A little bit of rain sampling. Would help, yeah.
Yep. I mean, also crop growth, but it would really help our soil sampling.
Well, that leads into my next one, weather. So we can't do anything about weather. We can't change the weather necessarily, but you can look at your fields and assess, okay, in spite of the weather I had this year, whether you're in this year it was areas of really dry, some were really wet, some were started really wet, and now we're getting really dry.
It seems like forever ago, that flooding in
right.
New London, Chiocton, with that 9 inches in April.
Yeah.
Seems like years.
Seems like it was, yeah, so long ago. But, you know, in spite of that, hail was another thing that came through. Maybe you had some hail, and that affected some of the other things we've talked about. Weed control, maybe, because your canopy didn't canopy as fast because your leaves were shredded. But, you know, whatever it was, did you do all right, or are there things that you can add to be flexible that might help? So I talked to a farm yesterday that's in the northern part of the state, and he was considering a rain 360 unit because it got so dry, like looked really good, and then when things really dried out, now he's worried, he's dairy farm, worried about, you know, what kind of quality of silage he's going to have, how if it's going to put on a cob, what that cob's going to look like. So he's considering, yeah, irrigation as an option, looking at your varieties, you know, did your variety selection work out? Is there something maybe you need to, some other traits that you need to consider moving in, and rotation? Are these fields in the right spot for this year, or do we need to change how we're going to rotate these acres because maybe it needs to go to something else that'll do better, whether it gets really wet or really dry, or, you know, getting back to weed control, maybe something different. So, you know, if you have alfalfa, you can seed down to maybe help manage some of those weed issues.
Did you ride along with me yesterday, Matt?
No, I did not.
It's like three stops. So we have this conversation about crop rotation because of, you know, historically wet fields in the spring, we're going to plant some wheat and then fall seed them because it's harder to get spring seeding done.
Yep.
Yeah, you must have. Did you bug? Did you put a bug in my
no
cap or something?
OnStar is always listening, Bill.
That's true.
But yeah, so like I said, we can't control the weather, but there's things we can manage around as a result of weather. And, you know, next year could be vastly different, but there's patterns we pick up on, and that can make the difference sometimes. Next, we got pests. Are, you know, the genetics you're putting in for your corn on corn acres, are they doing the job keeping the bugs at bay? Are you having cornworm issues? Is it time to, again, getting back to the rotation, is it time to switch those acres out you have an army worm issue this year in your wheat, in your early season crops like corn and soybeans, you have slug issues, do you have black cutworm, you know, whatever it was, start thinking about that, because especially like corn rootworm, they're not going to go away if you don't rotate that acre. And if the genetics weren't doing the job this year, you can try to switch up what you're using for next year, or you can just rotate and try to give that acre a break. But, you know, trying to manage pests, it's one that can change vastly every year, but there are certain ones that are more consistent. I know this year, you know, one that's not controlled by genetics, but I haven't seen a lot of until yesterday, was soybean aphids. And I was up in Gillett, and I was in a field that was about half threshold.
Oh, wow.
And it really surprised the heck out of me, because I started walking around like, oh, well, there's actually quite a few aphids on this leaf. Pull the canopy apart, and they're on the stem, and like, oh, okay. And then I started walking around, and it was patchy, so I mean, it wasn't ready to consider spraying necessarily, but it definitely going to be in that field again next week to see, you know, are we building? Is it going to plateau? I didn't see a lot of beneficials at the time. Hopefully they see more next week. Maybe they'll flock in and start feeding on those aphids, but
it seems like the beneficials know the threshold.
They do.
They want to do something. They like wait till it's just above like where you're like, oh man, we're gonna have to spray this, and then you're like, yeah, I'll wait a little bit, and then you check again and they take care of it or something. So yeah, it's just interesting on soybeans. And this late, when you get later in the year too, it's just less apt to spray.
Right.
But yeah, you're right, Matt. It's been we kind of talked about, well, it's not really a lot of insects this year, but it's still that it's never going to be like a zero insect year. You almost have more surprises in a year like this, because usually you could see trends and see things, you know, other farms, but this year it does seem like one farm will have a problem and the next farm won't. And I would say just in general, it's been an aphid year. I'm still seeing in alfalfa fields, our biggest is aphids. And early on, it was aphids as well. So it does seem to be a year for the aphids. So,
yeah, and who knows, you know, what next year will bring. But just always good to keep an eye on those kinds of things and figure out, you know, what, if anything, we can do about it. And the final one is yield. And that one, there's still time on the clock. We can't really fully evaluate yield until it's going through the combine or sitting in the bin, but there's still things you can look at, still factors you can consider. You know, everything we've mentioned so far is going to have an impact on yield, whether it's, you know, we get back to fertility, you know, did it look like it was holding out well, or does it start to look like it's burning up? How bad were the pest issues? What did the weather do? Did you get hail? What does our weed control look like? Those are all factors that contribute to yield that could take away from that. But, you know, we can also look at how many cobs do we have out there? Has every plant got a cob? Are we missing cobs? How big a round? You know, length may be a little bit harder to lock in on, just because we still have time. It might nose back if it stays dry. But there's factors we can look at that are contributing to yield that we can take note of. And once we get into harvest, then we can say, oh, yep, makes sense that it was only this because, you know, we found these things. Or, oh, even in spite of how it looked early, it still yielded really well, so that's good. There's always surprises when it comes to the harvest, but, you know, there are things we can take note of and manage. So just as important as how well this year's crop goes, you know, these few things that we've talked about are also important to think about for next year and for planning plant 2027. It'll be here before you know it.
Wow. Will it?
It was just talking about snow 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you talked about the flooding seeming like forever ago.
Great.
I can't believe it's August already. And then once harvest starts, man, it's December, and you're like, what? And you've already got your corn ordered and your beans ordered. Your winter wheat's in the ground. I mean, plant 2027 starts in September of 2026.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
We've crowned.
So you laugh at me, but it's coming.
Get ready.
We crowned a new Tilth Talk Radio champion fantasy league at that point.
Yeah, that'll happen too. Yeah, this fall. So,
notice I said new champion.
No.
You don't think I'm going to three-peat?
Bill's either destroying our plots or helping his.
You're the Dodgers, Matt.
Like, yeah.
Now the pressure is so. That was the talk on the radio.
Todd was the Dodgers, but then I took over when I got the back.
I'm the Brewers now.
Talk on the radio was the pressure now. Now they got Scooble, the pressure of now they have to three-peat, so they're going to fail. So, yep, Matt, you're the Dodgers. You can't three-peat. Cause
I don't want to be the Dodgers.
It's too much pressure.
I want to be the Yankees.
Who's your favorite little rascal? All right. Well, that'll do it for that main topic. Now let's move into our spotlight for today. All right. Today we're looking at how CRISPR is powering the sterile flies that can help eradicate the New World screwworm. So we've talked about that a lot this year, about some of the issues, and as it's moved into Texas with building up those sterile fly populations to try to take care of the New World screwworm. And a new technology could be the key to eradicating the pest. While CRISPR's been around for a while, it's being introduced into the gene editing for sterilized insect males and could also help kill the females. So St. Louis-based Agrigene was one of 40 projects that received funding from the USDA's NWS Grand Challenge that was launched earlier this year. She says that the traditional sterile fly methods use radiation, and while it works, it's not that great because it can affect the health of the insect. Obviously, if we were irradiated, we probably wouldn't be as healthy as we were before that, so same thing applies to the insects. You need these insects to be healthy enough to get out there and mate and put a halt to the mating cycle. So Matt Helms, the marketing lead, says Agrigene's technique enables the production of healthy, sterile male flies. Other piece from our technology is they live a certain lifespan and there's no opportunity for any genetic transfer in the environment. So using CRISPR technology in the sterile insect techniques, they target two genes, one which is important for male sterility and one that is important for female lethality. And through experiments, they've found a solution that takes those into account. And so in our case, if you knock out the gene for male sterility, the males are completely sterile, they're healthy, but they can't complete the mating process. And so, yeah, it's kind of an interesting way of thinking, you know, going from old school to new school when it comes to producing sterile flies to help eradicate the New World screwworm. All right, now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. Another thing we've missed for the last couple weeks, but it's back today. So today we're talking Fritz Haber. He received the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for synthesis of ammonia. His process of synthesizing ammonia from its elements, hydrogen, nitrogen, earned him the 1918 Nobel Prize in Chemistry. In 1905, Haber reached an objective long sought by chemists, that of fixing nitrogen from the air. Atmospheric nitrogen, or nitrogen gas, is relatively inert and does not easily react with other chemicals from new compounds. Using high pressure and a catalyst, Haber was able to directly react nitrogen gas and hydrogen gas to create ammonia. His process was soon scaled up by BASF's great chemist and engineer Carl Bosch and became known as the Haber-Bosch process, considered by many as one of the most important technological advances of the 20th century. Haber's breakthrough enabled mass production of agricultural fertilizers and led to a massive increase in the growth of crops for human consumption. Haber lived from 1868 to 1934 and was from a well-to-do German Jewish family involved in various manufacturing enterprises. He studied at several German universities, earning a doctorate in organic chemistry in 1891. After a few years of moving from job to job, he settled at the Department of Chemical and Fuel Technology at the Polytechnic in Karlsruhe, Germany, where he mastered the subject of physical chemistry. His research in physical chemistry eventually led to the Haber-Bosch process. In 1911, he was invited to become the director of the Institute for Physical Chemistry and Electrochemistry at the new Kaiser Wilhelm Gesellschaft in Berlin, where academic scientists, government, and industry cooperated to promote original research. And while he's well known for the ammonia side, he's also well known for helping develop poisonous gas during World War I, the ones that were used to basically attack other trenches during the First World War. First example was chlorine gas, and he supervised its initial deployment, the Western Front in Belgium in 1915. So, a little good and a little bad from Fritz Haber there. So,
a lot good, a lot bad there, yeah. All right, thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's real easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts. Or on your Android phone, download an app like Podcast Addict or Spotify. And you can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthegg.com/podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll move into our Cool Beans That's Corny with some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week, a new dairy study shows that soil health and conservation are improving forage production. So Dr. Maria Cloutier with the Soil Health Institute, a partner with the Dairy Soil and Water Regeneration Project, says Wisconsin farmers using reduced tillage and grazing are seeing more consistent forage production. 7% increase in organic carbon concentrations in low tillage fields. And grazed pastures have a 13% increase in organic carbon concentration. During a recent webinar, she said implementing various conservation practices can help fields withstand long-term environmental stresses, such as intensive rainfall events. Fields that have implemented soil health principles, structures have been maintained, roots have access to air, water, and nutrients they need. And said this research is designed to help dairy producers improve overall feed efficiency and production. Our That's Corny this week. Corn condition has slipped again as the USDA reports the first dented corn of 2026. So as of August 2nd, 90% of this year's corn crop is in the top 18 growing states and has reached the silking stage. It's the head of the five-year average of 87% by this time of year. The USDA reported 43% of the corn crop across those 18 states had reached the dough stage as of August 2nd. The five-year average for that is 38%. And for the first time this season, the department reported which states had corn with dents. And 6% of the crop across 12 states has reached the dented stage. So corn rated good to excellent is at 61%, which is down 2% from last week when it was 63%. Fair corn is at 25% of the crop, and poor or very poor is 14%. So still a lot of good to excellent corn, well over 50%, but last week it was at 63% good to excellent. So this time last year, 73% of the corn crop was in good to excellent condition. So our area, I think, looks really good, and, you know, get around the state outside of some pockets of fairly dry weather. There's a lot of really good-looking corn out there, but apparently not quite as good-looking as last year, so.
Yeah, even looking at the cobs this year, they just don't seem as good. I don't know. That can fool you or early, but it just has a weird feel to this crop yet of last year was so good, it's going to be hard to top it.
Yep.
And, yeah, you're right, man, just looking at what it looks like out there. What are you seeing, Bill?
Agreed. I'm seeing enough 14 rounds to go, You know, there's 16s and 18s, and I pulled a 20 yesterday, but there's still some 14s out there that you're like, okay, that's maybe it isn't quite as good.
Even some of the lengths too are, and that's just different by variety, yeah, different by population, all that. But those are odd right now where you go like, oof, this just a lot of 16 by 30s, just sort of a normal cob, nothing special, nothing.
Even some of the ones that are, you know, in the yellow milk stage, it's not all the way to the tip right off the bat. And so you're like, oh, okay, does that mean we're going to be nosing back even more? Or
right. You know. Just feels like, I called yesterday, we're not getting many county fair cobs. Like, it just doesn't feel like we're getting these ones where you're, oh, man, this is just, like, the plants look impressive, and then the cob on it, you're like, oh, that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad. We're not saying it's bad. Just saying that, you know, manage expectations. Like you said, Todd, last year was such a good year. You know, it may not be quite as good as last year. It's still going to be good. I'm hopeful. You know, hopefully we continue to get some rain here and help finish out. But just, yeah. All right. Now let's move into our Feel Good Friday for this week. Pagels Ponderosa has a boot camp, which brings the next generation of ag closer to the farm. From new friendships to hands-on learning, a week of summer camp helps middle school students explore modern dairy farming, agriculture technology, and many career paths that keep the industry moving. So for a group of middle school students in Kewaunee County, Wisconsin, the first week of summer starts at Pagels Ponderosa. Instead of easing into the break, they spend 4 days moving through the farm's dairy crop, technology, and animal care spaces as part of a summer school program built around hands-on learning. By the time they leave, the students have taken apart engines, explored drones, learned how rations are built, and have spent time with cows and calves. The 4-day boot camp, which was launched 9 years ago by Pagels Ponderosa Dairy, gives middle school students a closer look at dairy production, crop management, technology, and careers connected to agriculture. So it was started by second-generation owner John Pagel and a team of individuals from the farm, says Kylie Pagel, farm marketing advisor and HR representative for Pagels Ponderosa. We wanted to build off what the county was already doing and give students more time, more experiences, and a deeper look at what a career in agriculture can be. So the idea for the boot camp grew out of Kewaunee County's Economic Development Corporation's Ag Career Days, which was an annual event introducing 7th and 8th graders to local agriculture through short rotations at a host farm. So that's cool. You can send your kids to boot camp. Looks like they even had a drone this year. It's like a look at how spray drones work and all that kind of stuff. So sounds like fun. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about looking at your crop now to start making decisions for next year. In our spotlight, we took a look at how CRISPR is helping sterile fly production to eradicate New World screwworm. Egg History Minute, we talked about Fritz Haber. Cool Beans this week was a study showing that soil health and conservation help improve forage production. That's Corny is corn is not quite as good as it was last week, and hopefully that trend won't continue. And our Feel Good Friday was the Pagels Ponderosa Boot Camp helping the next generation get closer to the farm. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.